Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Tuesday night open call. It is April 22nd. Jeez, I don't want to jump the gun any more than we already have.
Yeah, please.
April 22nd, 2014. Got my four in the wrong place there.
That's all right.
Welcome to everybody. We're going to have a good call tonight. We already got a lot of people on the line already tonight, which is great. And
yeah, that's
it's always good to have a crowd. And we got some interesting news tonight. I'm sure people will have some good news for us.
I want to share one with somebody. Not news, but just some information anyway. Regarding this. Anyway, let's do the disclaimer, pal. Just get this real quick, of course. We can't provide legal advice. We never provide legal advice. We're not attorneys. We're not a law firm. We're not a substitute for an attorney. Nobody on this call wants to be an attorney, purports to be an attorney. Or if you want an attorney and you want legal advice, or if you want legal advice, go seek yourself an attorney. But we are going to have a lot of fun discussing legal situations and on the call this evening, things that we've done in the past, are doing now, and will do in the future. So, again, if you want legal advice, please get off this call because this is not intended to be legal advice. So just a quick note, guys, in case my mom and dad are in their 70s. They were just over the house literally like 5 minutes ago, and I listened to a message they got on the phone. Somebody left them a message, and the number is a 914-364-9546 number. And according, I looked it up real quick on Google. It says, according to the local newspaper, it's a scam. Where they're calling and saying to the Department of the Treasury or the IRS, and they're going to freeze your accounts and put a lien on your homes, etc. So if it is, if you get that, just remember it's a scam, and it's an obvious TCPA. So if we can find it, I want to get it. And it's somewhere, it's looking like it's coming from the number I'm looking at is coming from the Mount Vernon, New Rochelle, White Plains, which is northern, all northern New York. Okay? So just so you guys know, it's a very, very heavy foreign, sounds like Asian accent. I don't know what they want. I'm going to try to call them tomorrow myself, saying you better get an attorney to call them back, this, that, and the other. So just to give you, it's a robocall. So if you guys get those, remember, let's prosecute. I don't know who it is, but let's hammer down on them. So that's all I have, David.
Okay. Well, that's not good news, but it's news, obviously.
No, I don't want somebody to get scammed and thinking something's going to happen to them.
Absolutely.
In fact, it's not. So, yeah.
Right. Absolutely. And for everybody, if you have good news for us tonight, just hit the one key on your keypad, and that will put you in the queue. It's for good news only at this point in time. Don't you other people be trying to sneak in there early, because I will cut you off. That's my instructions from the boss. And, boy, you don't want to make the boss mad. Got to run a tight ship here. I'm looking for Jeff. He must be a little slow getting on tonight, because we got everybody else. Larry, you with us?
Indeed I am.
Very good. And we got John, and we got Terry. The only one we're lacking yet at the moment is Jeff, but for those people that have good news, hit the one key on your keyboard. I'll go ahead and throw out my good and interesting news that I just got this afternoon. Actually, I got some good news the other day. Saturday, I got copy of the notice of service from my process server on suit number 2 against Midland Credit Management and Small Claims Court. They were served last Tuesday. I should say their registered agent was served last Tuesday. And then, lo and behold, this afternoon, I got an email from the attorney from Midland Credit Management, and there was an attached document in the form of an offer of judgment in the amount of $2,501 for one TCPA call and one FDCPA claim. And
wow.
The more I look at it and the more I think about it, there's something kind of strange there, so I'm going to have some communication with this attorney tomorrow, but I don't know if I had the information last week when we had the call. I'm thinking possibly I didn't, but the interesting thing that happened was they took my first small claims case into federal court, as I expected they would, and then they tried to move it, keywords, tried to move it to the MDL, and the MDL rejected it. And I called the MDL panel last week, the clerk there, to ask why, if she could shed some light on it. She put me on hold twice, came back, and stated they just don't want it. That's all she could tell me, which I thought was extremely interesting. And now all of a sudden they've made an offer of judgment. And for those of you that don't know what an offer of judgment is, that's when they offer to pay you and have a judgment against them. They don't even negotiate a settlement. They just say, yeah, we'll take a judgment and we'll pay you money. And they offered me $2,501 plus my expenses. So there's one line in there that I'm not comfortable with as far as what it goes into, and I won't go into all that here, but that's very interesting and good news, because if you stop and think about it from a liability standpoint, that lawsuit was on the very first call out of 110 that they placed to my cell phone. If they admit guilt, that and by doing the offer of judgment, they are admitting that they used ATDS equipment and that they failed to identify themselves as a debt collector when they called. So they're tying themselves into violations on both TCPA and FDCPA, and every single call was the same as that one. So this could be very interesting. I'm going to be interested to see what the attorney has to say. So that's the good news I've got. Any of our moderators got any good news?
Dave, can you tell us what in the language you're concerned about?
I will read you the one line. It's a very short document, but the one, keep in mind that I have filed a second lawsuit against them. I'm quite sure that they know about it. The registered agent was served a week ago today. This came this afternoon. It's dated today. Number four, this offer contemplates all of plaintiff's claims asserted against defendant.
No, that's not a
problem. It does not go on to say against defendant in this action.
No, I don't think that's a problem, because you can only get a judgment against them based on your complaint in that lawsuit.
Well, I was kind of thinking that, but I was going to have some discussion, and I wanted to go over that. We're obviously not going to do that right now, but that was the main thing. The rest of the language in it is just fine. But the thing that slays me is that first lawsuit was my damages claimed were $1,525, yet they're offering me $2,501 plus costs. That's what doesn't seem to make any sense. So, anyway, very interesting. All right, let's go to 804 and see if we have some good news. 804, you've been unmuted. You got some good news for us?
You're talking to me?
If you're 804, we're talking to you. You bet.
Oh, well, I was...
This is for good news only. This isn't for Q&A yet. Do you have any good news for us? All right. Well, we're going to go ahead and mute that. Let's go to 724. Do you have any good news for us tonight? 724.
I must have pressed the wrong key, sir. I wanted to ask a question later on.
Yeah. Okay. We'll get you in here shortly. We're just trying to catch the good news. We'll be back to you.
Thank you.
All right. Let's go to 413 for good news. 413, you got any good news for us? Well, evidently not.
Apparently nobody has any good news, Dane.
Yeah. Well, you know, Jesse, as I've said so many times, the good news ebbs and flows. We got some times when we're absolutely covered up with it, and other times that there's just not a lot going, and that's not indicative that nobody's doing anything, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it's just the way it tends to fall at times. So, you know, it's one of those things that if we have it, we have it. If we don't, we don't. Again, one more time, any of our moderators have any good news they want to bring out? Or
if not, then we
will proceed. Okay. All right. Then we're going to have at it. All you people that want to get in for Q&A, we're going to jump on that. So hit the one key on your keypad. That'll put you in line so that we can take your calls, and we'll see if we can answer some questions for you. So we're going to go back to 413. Good evening. Area code 413. You've been unmuted. Go ahead with your question, please. Well, if we're not going to have anybody speak up, then we're going to mute them, and we're going to go to 469. That's a local number around here. 469, you've been unmuted. You got a question for us?
Hello.
Good evening.
Good evening. I'm sorry. I'm actually outside on my bike, so I got to catch my wind. question for you. I am in bankruptcy, unfortunately, and 2 weeks after I filed my bankruptcy case, the HOA filed for foreclosure on my property. And I've told them that I'm in bankruptcy. I sent the lawyer evidence, but they still have not dismissed the case. So I'm trying to figure out, I guess I do have an action for them since this is an act. They are trying to get a debt. Right.
Collect a debt while you're in bankruptcy, yeah. Big time violation, right, Larry? Huge.
Yep. Okay, so what would you do?
Sue them. You don't have to ask me what I'd do. I just sue them. <That's what
I'm laughs> Okay, so I will sue the, I guess the HOA, the foreclosure attorney, and probably the management company, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, you would go after who's involved in it.
Yeah,
okay.
Basically that boils down to. The question I have is you said they're attempting to continue to foreclose, or they're attempting to collect association fees, or what are they doing?
They have filed a application for foreclosure case up in my local court district. So
okay.
it's a state case. So my understanding is even that is an act to collect the debt.
It is.
Right. Okay.
They shouldn't be doing anything if you're in foreclosure or in bankruptcy, I'm sorry.
Right. So I've warned the attorney twice now. And
you shouldn't have to.
The bankruptcy court, if you listed them on your BK, the court should notice them.
Well, no, because did you list them? That's David. I'm not so sure he did. That's my question. Okay. Well, if you did, then, oh, they're in real trouble.
Okay, great. Well, I can just write up the lawsuit and send a copy to that foreclosure attorney as soon as possible.
Yeah.
Okay.
Get it out there.
And on the FTC, well, I already know which FTC they, I guess they violated, so that's fine. All right, well, thanks a lot.
All righty.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I like to hear stuff like that. Doesn't sound good for him, but it is good for him, so. You know,
yeah, it's just amazing the stuff that these people do.
Well, it never ceases to amaze you, does it? I mean,
really.
Remember what we always say, idiots you can fix. Or, I mean, you can't fix stupid, but you can fix ignorant, you know? And,
yeah, exactly.
When they're stupid like that, there's nothing you can do about it.
Yep. All right, 970, you've been unmuted. Go ahead, please.
Hi, this is Kim, and I have a credit. I guess it's good news. I asked Walmart to validate my account, and I got information back verifying everything, but I'm still not sure. sometimes I'm clear as mud about what to do, and I've been listening to the webinars and online. I kind of need a helper, and I was wondering if there's anybody else in Colorado or if somebody in the group could help me. I have a disability, and sometimes I understand things and sometimes I don't, but I don't want this to get away from me, and I'm kind of scared of it, and I don't know what to do.
Well, the question I have for you right off the bat is, if you have an account with Walmart and if they verified it, what action do you think you would have? I mean, they're the original creditor, so what do you have a problem with, I guess?
They actually shut down my account that because of non-payment, but I had paid them, and they keep adding overage fees. I haven't used the card since, like, November, December. That was Terry's advice, and I haven't used it. And but they keep adding overage charges, and then that takes it over the credit, and then there's an over-the-credit limit fee, and then there's a late fee, and then there's a this fee and a that fee. And it's way too much, you guys would say, usury. So they didn't validate the account at all. There's usury, and...
Well, usury is the only thing you have to worry about. They're the original creditor, so there's not, you know...
Okay, here's another thing. We got phone calls from Sam's Club Credit, not from Walmart, and then all the things I got in writing are from GE Capital Retail Bank.
Yeah, it's always a separate bank that does, like Citibank is notorious for doing those for, you know, Home Depot, Walmart, whoever it is.
But it's that never, makes them FDCPA.
Yeah, well, she said Walmart.
No, she said she's
Walmart.
Sam's Club,
Walmart,
et cetera.
Credit. So the phone calls were from Sam's Club, and we credit, and we did keep proof of those. I have proof.
Well, those are all TCPA calls, so that's good. But what the hell does Sam's Club have to do with Walmart? That's where I'm curious too.
Exactly.
Sam's Club is an affiliate of Walmart.
Yeah, I know that. But
it's a different company.
Exactly. It's a whole separate company, so that's my curiosity.
Exactly. Huh. And then I sent them the validation letter, and then I got back the verification. And then today or yesterday, I got another letter saying that they were still working on getting me my information, but they sent the verification letter April 11th. So,
well, what did this verification letter say? What was there?
It has, it does not say when I opened the account, like the original signature.
No, just what does it say? Don't tell us what it doesn't say. Tell us what it says.
Oh, your correspondence directed our office regarding the above referenced account has been referred to my attention for assistance. I have reviewed your card account history, and on behalf of GE Capital Retail Bank, we offer the following response. This letter is to notify you that after examining the account history, we have verified the history reflected on your account is correct and has been accurately reported to the credit bureaus. We are obligated under the Fair Credit Reporting Act to provide truthful and accurate information to all credit reporting agencies. With respect to the verification of your account history, enclosed, please find copies of your monthly billing statements. These statements reflect the transactions and payments applied to your account, as well as the payment history being reported to the major credit reporting agencies. Per your request, we have coded your account for no telephone calls regarding payment arrangements on the account. Since the account is currently in collections, any further inquiry with respect to the above-referenced account should be directed to the following address. And then it's GE Capital Retail Bank, in Ohio instead of Florida. I started off with Florida. And then it's, should you have any further concerns, please don't hesitate to contact our office in writing at the address listed above. Corporate Specialist Consumer Relations.
Well, you're not dealing with Walmart. That's obvious.
Right, and don't get caught up in the distinction or lack of distinction between validation and verification. It's just semantics. That's my opinion. I don't know if anybody else agrees with that.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
The only court that doesn't agree is the court in Hawaii.
What was that word you said?
The validation and verification
semantics
mean the same thing as far as we're concerned.
Oh, okay. Okay, so
the point is, you're talking about that you're dealing with Walmart. You're not dealing with Walmart. That's very obvious from the letter you got. Who did the letter come from?
Right, it did not come from Walmart. That's right.
Right.
It came from GE.
Exactly, that's who you're dealing with. So what's Sam's Club doing calling you about it? What have they got to do with GE Money Bank?
Right.
Well, you got to put your pieces of the puzzle together there. What areas have you been studying in the website?
The credit part that you've talked about.
Well, now, what do you mean the credit part?
Credit cards. That
beating
section,
credit
but also,
cards. You should be in beating credit cards and taking their money.
Okay.
Those are the two areas that you want to be studying in.
Especially taking their money, because you're not in any imminent danger, it seems like, right now.
Right.
Okay. And the forum, but I still don't know what to do next. I know that's really silly, but...
Well, no, you just need to study more, that's all. What I would suggest to do is go in the forum and post that you're looking for other people to contact to connect with in Colorado.
Okay.
And look in there see if there's somebody, do a search in both the forum. Well, yeah, actually just in the forum. Once you get in the forum, you can do a search in there. There's a search feature. Put Colorado in there and see what you come up with. You might find somebody else that's already in there, other people that are looking for contacts.
Okay, terrific. Thank you.
And then, you can private message back and forth in the forum. Okay?
Okay.
Can I help you out?
Yeah. Hold on, Dave. In the pleading section, there's also some people that have taken under their state. So look in the pleadings library under Colorado and see if somebody's posted something in there. I know they've done it in other states. I was browsing through the other day and found that. So just know
you're talking in the forum, though, right, Jesse?
Yeah, in the pleading section of the forum,
Right, just to clarify so she knows for sure.
Okay.
So you got that squared away? You know where to look?
Okay, I will look there. Thank you.
All righty, thank you.
Thank you for all your help. Okay.
You're very welcome. All right, let's go to 240. You have been unmuted. What is your question?
Hello. My name's Nancy, and this is the first time I've ever called. I kind of heard a few of your your webinars on YouTube and such, and kind of getting bits and pieces of what your program or advice or your, I don't know what you want to call it, offer to regular people that are trying to get out of certain things. But I guess one of my original questions that I had emailed, and I know you get tons of emails, was, which I'm just picking up with some of the callers that are calling right now, is that the original creditor, for example, Capital One, if I took a credit card with Capital One, they're the original creditors. They're the ones that actually can come to me and say, hey, we want our money back, and that is true because I used the money, I signed up for the credit, but then after a while, they sell off the credit to someone else, and that's where I guess you guys come in saying these people are contacting you and telling you to pay XY bank now for Capital One's debt because they bought it maybe pennies on the dollar for my debt, and now they want me to come and pay them. So that's where I can kind of use your information and resources to kind of get them back and saying, hey, can you prove this is my debt? And
well,
if they can't.
First, let me stop you right there. First and foremost, thank you. Welcome for the call, or welcome aboard and welcome to our call. But I think you have found the first and or the foremost leading information center on Capital One, and it's called Larry. So you've definitely come to the right information source for Capital One. Larry, you want to tell her that it doesn't really matter if they're the original creditor or not in a lot of instances?
Yeah, not hardly.
Wait a second. You'd be totally surprised that I actually have two credit cards with Capital One, and I'm actually pretty good. Those are the only two credit cards that I've actually, like, stayed, you know, paying on time and everything. It's actually other banks that I did pull my credit from. Annualcreditreport.com the other day because you guys said to do that, and then another one I haven't done yet. And I kind of looked and saw, like, all these, bank account, like, banks that have said that I have, like, these debts to them, and I don't even know who these guys are. I am sure at one point in my life I did take a credit card out long time ago, and I didn't pay for it, and then it went to one bank and to another bank and to another bank, and these might be the banks that bought the credit, because I have no idea who these people are.
Yeah,
you need to figure
so
it out.
Yeah,
that's,
so these are the ones that I'm
thinking. You need to know what's going on here.
Your resources could help me,
you know. And I want you to do something. This will benefit everybody on this call, because you're new, and I know a lot of the members and a lot of the non-members already know what I'm about to tell you when I tell you this. Do you keep saying that I took out a credit card and I spent the money and I used the money and I didn't pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any money, what you call money, hanging around that you can look at, like a dollar bill or a $5 bill or something?
No.
You don't have any cash on you whatsoever, no currency, nothing.
Oh, yeah, it's in my purse in my car. I'm outside right now. I'm talking. But, yeah, I do.
Do you get that cash from those credit card companies?
Yeah.
No.
I want you to just look at the top of a bill tonight, and remember what I'm going to tell you, and then take it to bed with you, and I'm going to open up a rabbit hole for you. Then you're going to go join what lies in your debt. That's what you need to go do, really, honestly. But I want you to look at something, because when you look up at the very top of any bill, it doesn't matter which one it is, it'll say Federal Reserve Note. Every one of them does. Okay?
Right.
You got to look at what's in front of you before you start making all these assumptions. And that's what a lot of our members have learned over the past, okay? When you look at that, it says Federal Reserve Note. Then you go look up the definition of a note, okay? I need you to understand this clearly, because when you become a member, then you'll understand it. Now, I'm looking at the Law Dictionary. It's Barron's Legal Guide, 5th edition. I'm going to read to you the definition of a note.
Mm-hmm.
A writing acknowledging a debt and promising to pay. So you can never pay for anything using those notes, because you're using a debt to pay a debt. It's a negative. So I know you're new, but that's something you got to get clearly in your mind to understand really what's going on around you, so you don't look at yourself and go, well, I didn't pay. You couldn't pay. If they wanted you to pay, you couldn't pay.
Right.
So just remember that. Don't feel bad. Don't understand our monetary system is the biggest scam, Ponzi scam created in the history of mankind. I didn't say that. The bankers are telling you that. It doesn't matter. My point is that I don't want you to continue on with, oh, I didn't pay, and I didn't pay, and I didn't, because you can't pay. Nobody on a phone call can pay for anything. It's a note. It's a promise to pay. And that's what that piece of paper is. So get that clear your mind. Think about that for the evening and go, okay. And then you need to go join, because then you're going to learn really what you need to be doing to go make yourself a few of those negotiable instruments that we call money.
Interestingly, it was like the first time I saw your videos, I wanted to learn more and more and more, and it was just bits and pieces, and I was like, I should sign up. But then this webinar came out, I said I can ask my questions here, because that's, you know, I think everyone at some point gets in trouble, and then, you know, they want to pay it off. But
you're not in trouble.
Like,
it's a circumstance. Remember,
right,
it's a circumstance.
Right, and you get into a hole, and they don't make it easy and everything, and which brought me to my next question, which was, I don't know if I can do anything about it, but I would love to use your program for the credit card thing and just get out of it, like just whatever. But
you're not getting
out
of anything. Okay, remember this. You're not getting out of anything. We're not. This whole system is not to get out of anything. As a matter of fact, there's a lot of moral issues at the beginning almost 4 years ago about this program because, you know, Dave and Terry and all our moderators, John and Larry, we all thought, no, we don't want people to think this is the way to get out of your debt. But if I owe David Mack, if I owe Dave Mack $1,000 and he shows up at my front door and he breaks my kneecap, and I know you guys are tired, go get a cup of coffee. You've heard me tell the story 100 times, but this is a brand new gal right here. Right? So he comes to my door and he breaks my kneecap, and I call the police and they come arrest him, and he goes to jail for 6 months. And he comes back to my house and says, you still owe me $1,000. Has anything changed? Have I owed him the $1,000? Just because he broke my kneecap, I sued him. He paid me $10,000 in damages.
Right.
He paid all my hospital bills. Does he still have the right to come back after he gets out of jail and say, you owe me the $1,000, give it to me?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm asking you a question. Does he or doesn't he?
Yeah.
That's right. See,
that.
I'm not getting out of it, but I'm holding him accountable. So I put his butt in jail. Dave's 6'4", 240 pounds, a big boy. I'm a skinny kid. So I'm putting him in jail because he broke my kneecap, and I can't beat him up, so I'm just going to have him arrested. I prosecuted him. He paid me $10,000 in damages. Well, at the end of the day, when that's all over, I still owe him $1,000. You see what I mean? So you're not getting out of anything. So now I'm nine. Actually, he lost nine trying to collect the $1,000 because of the way in which he tried to collect. So the debt is absolutely irrelevant. It's in the manner of which you're trying to collect it that's important.
Okay, so that being said, the money that I would have – I'm using your example. The money that you would have attained from the suing him for breaking your leg, could you go back and use that money to pay him for the original debt?
I can do what I want to.
Okay.
It's your money.
Okay.
If you were, yeah, it's your money. You know, but if you're smart, you would have bought a shotgun. So next time he comes over, you shoot his leg off. Dave's a big man. I've eaten dinner with him a couple times. He's a big boy.
Okay.
You see what I'm saying? You're holding them accountable, and that's the whole secret of the system. I might owe you $2,000, but you just violated $5,000 worth of statutes.
Right.
How do you want to handle this? You want to get rid of the $2,000 and give me $3,000? I'm good. A lot of people say, hey, I just get rid of the $2,000 and we're done, get it off my credit, they're happy. That is justification for them. So it just depends on your personal choice.
Oh, I understand what you're saying. It took me a minute because I kind of like felt like in the moral sense, like you said, it's like I did use that money and somebody is
no, you
that
didn't.
Money, but it's a, no, I didn't. Okay. Okay.
No, you
know,
when you get a firm grip on that, you'll be able to leave that behind. And the whole basis of what we're doing is just very simply, we're going to help you learn the meaning of the consumer protection statute so that you can see when they come and try and collect from you where they're violating the law and where you have what's called a private right of action where you can go sue them. For their actions. It's got nothing to do with the debt or the alleged debt. It's simply about the actions that they take to try and collect from you or put stuff in your credit report that shouldn't be there or call your cell phone with automated equipment, which they can't do. You just have to learn about the laws and then learn how to use the courts to enforce those laws. And that's the essence of what we do. And it works very, very well. I'm living proof of it.
All right. I don't want to take up all your time because I know there's a bunch of other calls.
No, we won't let you, so don't worry about it.
The one last question was I owned a house way back a few years ago, and I had a short sale because it was either short sale or foreclosed. So I ended up doing the short sale, but HOA ended up taking me to court and filed the judgment and was put in court because I didn't get the letters to go to court because it's in my ex-husband's name and mine, so it was my name and his name to go to court, and he got the papers. He never gave them to me so I could go and say, hey, because they never wanted to take my payment plan. They wanted like $300 every month, and I didn't have it. So I said, I can pay $25 every month. And they said, no. They said, if you don't pay the $100, $200 that you said you would, we'll take you to court and place the judgment and do whatever we need to do to collect our $10,000. So I did check my credit report. It does not have the judgment there placed yet, but I'm a little – I'm not sure if there's anything at that point that I can do for that. Since I missed the court date, I didn't get any of the paperwork, and it already went to court. And
we would have to get more information about exactly how that happened, when it happened, before
okay.
we could make any suggestions on how you might
okay.
deal with it. There may be something you can do, but we don't know that
okay.
until we would get more information.
Just a second,
so you know, because we're going to have to move on to our next caller here in a second.
That's fine.
There are calls Monday and Wednesday night as well where you can get questions like this answered. And
okay.
I will make an announcement at the end of this call tonight at 10 o'clock Eastern as to the information for the call tomorrow night. So
okay.
you'll be able to have that, and you can join us, and that there's more time on those calls to be able to discuss this and help you.
Oh, I appreciate your information, and I look forward to joining your group and your program. So
join it. I'm telling you, you would love to have you. And plus, we're right in the middle of a special webinar series every other Tuesday. That's What Lies in Your Credit Report. So you need to get in. So next Tuesday, you're in on that webinar, because this call is only every other week, and then the every other Tuesday is blocked specifically for our members. And Terry, Larry, Dave, John, Jeff, and myself are doing a webinar specifically on credit reporting and how it affects
Perfect.
You and how to get it cleaned up.
Awesome. That sounds great. Thank you very much, guys. I appreciate it.
All
right. You know what, Dave? Give me a few minutes, can you? Since we didn't have good news and it's only 8:30, I just ran across my wife's girlfriend. I told you, come by and give me all this paperwork to look for her in her case. And she did one of the best verified motions to recuse or disqualify a judge I've ever seen. And I'd like to share it with our callers. This is interesting. She did this over the foreclosure guys. And, you hear Dave or Larry or myself, Jeff, sometimes say you guys need to just move to recuse the judge. This is pretty interesting. This is a mortgage foreclosure matter, number two, prior to hearing matter being instituted. Defendant informed the plaintiff by and through the debt servicing agents that because of family hardship, she could not afford the mortgage payment, and the defendant sought a mortgage modification. Defendant was denied any forbearance relief from the debt servicer. Defendant is now represented by the undersigned attorney in this matter and other foreclosure matters. The Honorable Jefford Millers is a retired circuit court judge, sitting as a senior court judge in the foreclosure court in Osceola County. The Honorable Jeff Millers, as a senior judge assigned to foreclosure, has heard the matter of Wells Fargo versus Barbara Edgar. The matter came before Judge Millers on a motion to strike the plaintiff's affirmative defenses and counterclaim. At the time, now she's quoting other cases. This is awesome. Apparently this judge is an idiot. At the time, the court stated out loud in a response to the plaintiff's counsel that there had not been a mortgage payment made in this case for 21 months. Plaintiff's counsel had alleged 2 years, and the court stated 21 months, indicating the court had taken it upon itself to count the months a payment had not been made. See the transcript of the hearing, da-da-da-da. The court statement was made even though it is the plaintiffs that refused payments from the defendants and told her they wanted her house. The defendant has reviewed the transcript. The judge eventually granted the motion against Edgar and stripped her of her affirmative defenses and counterclaims with prejudice. In a mortgage foreclosure case against Deutsche Bank versus Yvonne, during a hearing on a motion to strike affirmative defenses and counterclaims, the court, Honorable Jeffrey Miller, again stated out loud, well, it's a 2008 case. This is 2011. Where has it been for the last 3.5 years? See the transcripts, yada, yada, yada. The court statement was made even though it's the plaintiff's burden to prove a case in a mortgage foreclosure case. In Deutsche Bank versus Matchett, the undersigned then began to try to make an or tennis motion pursuant to Rule 23.30A, Judicial Rules of Admission, tried to seek a continuance to supplement it with written sworn motions. In the same hearing, the court stated, I feel you come to court with a prejudice against the court. You ever heard of that one? Now I will decline hearing anything further in this case from you.
So I'm out of here. This hearing is over. That's what the judge says. So I'm out of here. This hearing's over. The court further stated that the plaintiff's counsel tried to speak. I'm sorry. The hearing is over, counsel. I'm not going to sit here and have people accuse this court. When the plaintiff's attorney tries to say something further on their record, the court stated, I'm leaving. You can put whatever you want to. This hearing's over. I'm not going to sit here and take this from any attorney. I don't have to, and I'm not gonna. A review of the transcript demonstrates the judge actually recused himself for reasons known to himself before the hearing was complete. In the matter of she goes on. Anyway, it's over in another paragraph. But my point is, this is an awesome little motion. I'm going to put this on the website for the members because it's a good motion to recuse. It's a good outline. So you can see how easy it is to recuse a judge, and this judge actually recused himself. So pretty interesting. You ever heard anything like that, Dave, where you actually the judge is accusing you of having a prejudice against the court? Did I lose you? Dave?
Hello? Dave?
Yeah. I'm sorry. I somehow bumped my button here. Yeah, that's just amazing to me.
Where'd he go? I thought I was reading to myself.
No, I evidently bumped a button on my phone here. I didn't realize it. I've never heard anything like that before.
Me too, right?
That's obviously somebody that does not belong on a bench. I mean, wow. What else is there to say other than you need to retire or do something else?
Wow.
Man, I mean, that's just blatant disregard for his duties as a judge.
Yeah.
He's obviously one of those people that thinks he's God and can do and say whatever he wants. He has no idea of decorum in his own court. Man.
Yeah, well, I'm just wondering here. This is interesting. Rule 36. Remember we were talking about attorneys signing admissions?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
36, Federal Rules of Civil Procedure 36, subsection A, subsection 3, right?
That's just...
Yeah, signed by the party or its attorney. So
well,
an attorney can sign those.
Admissions, but not interrogatories.
Correct.
Yes.
But as far as I'm concerned, if the attorney signs the admissions, they become a witness.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, Jesse, you got any more there, or are we going to go to
No,
call?
I just wanted to share that because I know we got a lot of members on the line. So.
Yeah. Yeah, we do. We got a bunch of people on the call tonight. That's great. All right, let's go to 813 for your question. Go ahead, please. You've been unmuted.
Hi, Dave. Thank you.
Good evening. What you
I
got
have
for
a question.
Us tonight?
I have a question about the rules regarding case management conference and discovery plan. And I just wanted to verify that I'm interpreting this correctly. It says after a suit is filed and the defendant has appeared. Now, does that mean can appearance be interpreted or is appearance interpreted to mean that they filed an answer?
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm wondering in my case, why are we working on a case management schedule, a 26F conference, when I don't even have an answer to my complaint yet? I'm wondering if maybe
matter.
I was... It doesn't
matter. No. Don't confuse that. No. You can set that 26F ASAP. As soon as they acknowledge you, you serve them, and you want to set it and get going, you can. No big deal.
Okay, so it's not necessary then that they file their answer to my complaint prior to that?
No, I've never heard of such a thing that you have to do.
So,
that. Have you, Dave?
No, you can you can go ahead and contact the attorney on the other side and say, when do you want to get together and... do the 26F conference.
Yeah, I've already done that, and we've run out of time on the judge's orders to have that completed, so I filed for an extension of time.
Okay.
I just wanted to make sure I wasn't out of line in filing for an extension of time prior to having them answer my complaint. And
not
okay,
at all.
So that's good.
Well, you had an order from the court stating you're supposed to have completed that by a certain date, I assume? from what she said?
Yes, I think it was in the judge's order. She sent orders for the notice of pendency of related cases and related cases and certificate of interested persons and corporate disclosure statement. And somewhere within there, I understood that by a certain date, we had to have the 26F conference finished.
Well, it should state that you should have your, I mean, it should be very plainly stated if it's in there.
Let me see.
Should
well,
be
anyway,
60
you put in for an enlargement. Go ahead, Larry.
I said, isn't it 60 days from the date of first service of a defendant?
Yes. Yeah, and that's what it says in the related case order and Track 2 notice. Counsel and any unrepresented party shall meet within 60 days after service.
Uh-huh.
So that time has expired, and the attorney wanted to meet telephonically rather than in person. So,
well, that's normally what most people do. You normally do it by phone.
But we do have
it's relatively rare that you meet face to face.
But our local rules say we have to meet face to face.
Ours does too. You're in Orlando, so
yeah. Okay. Well,
she's doing good. I'm glad she's doing that. Yeah, because you're reading your local rules.
Yeah. Well, you're making
like
a point. you're paying attention to local rules, which you should. But I think the majority of places it can be done by phone. But everybody always should look at their local rules. Always know what your local rules are where you are. Don't take anything for granted.
Well, ours are a little ambiguous here because it says that we have to meet in person, but it encourages us to meet telephonically if at all possible. So
it's that
a little
general,
ambiguous there.
Or is that specifically for the 26F?
I believe that's specifically for the 26F.
Well, that is contradictory then, isn't it?
Yeah,
yes,
it is. So, I mean, we've already had one meeting on the phone, but she hasn't followed up with
anyway,
anything.
Just push forward on that 26F, and you want to get them in a trap where they may or may not realize that they need to appear in person, or they may or may not realize that you know that, and they might think they can get away with it, but, you know, you're about to spring a trap on them. You say, let's schedule a meeting for such and such time, and they say, well, we're going to appear by phone, and, you know, how you answer that is up to you, but You set a meeting at a place and time of your choosing, as long as they agree to it, and they can file a motion to appear telephonically, but that's up to them. They've got to take the initiative.
Right, and I've just kind of left that with her, but I did file for an extension of time because I'm responsible for getting that in on time as well as the opposition, right?
Correct.
That's
it's your responsibility to make it happen.
Yeah.
Right.
But
so
they've got
why,
to
you, you as
they
the plaintiff are
yet.
The one that's required to move the case forward. To take the initiative to move it forward.
Right. And with respect to the motion that I made last month for entry of clerk's default, the judge placed an order this morning for the opposing counsel to show cause for why they haven't done that. And we gave them 6 days to do it. So I said, hooray, I got 6 days to do that motion for default judgment.
Yeah, they'll probably answer now that the court told them to. Sounds like they're playing games.
Well, they are playing games. They're really trying to delay things. I think they're really trying to delay things. And,
you run into that from time to time. Some of them will be responsive and move along with things. Others will be a pain in the neck. And you never know. It's a toss of the coin every time you have a lawsuit and deal with them. You never know what you're going to get.
But just as sure as I say, as I think I have a 6-day vacation and I don't prepare that motion for default judgment, I'll need it.
Well, do it. If nothing else, it's good practice, and then you've got an example should you need one in the future. So it won't be time wasted. It'll
be
educational, if nothing else.
It'd be a good rough draft for a summary judgment down the road, too, right?
Well, no, there's a big difference.
Big difference?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. See, I'm not there yet. So.
Yeah. Night and day difference between that and summary judgment.
Okay. And if I'm going to talk about... In the motion for default judgment, if I'm going to talk about how I feel like they changed my original complaint when they moved it from state to federal, if I'm going to complain about that being harassment and wasting time or whatever, that can I refer to any rule other than Rule 11 with respect to that? Where it says,
you know,
specifically
what is a rule for. Or, I mean, a motion for a default judgment. What is that? Stop and think about what it actually is. What's its purpose? What's its purpose?
Its purpose is to just get it over with.
They didn't answer, so they defaulted.
Right, they didn't answer. Right.
Okay. Well, why do you want to go venture out in the South 40?
Okay.
The basis for a default is failure to answer, is it not?
Yes. So just stay within the guidelines of what – just stay
the KISS principle.
Okay.
The KISS principle. Keep it sweet and simple. Stay on point.
Okay. Okay, I got it. That'll save me some time. Thank you.
Yep. You're very welcome. Okay, let's go to 847.
Yeah, how you guys doing?
You've been
can you
hear me? Yeah,
you guys
we can
hear me
you.
Okay?
Yep.
Yeah, my name is Mark. I found you guys sort of on YouTube, and I listened to your phone call, this same phone call a week ago, and I joined up the next day. I've been reading the website. I'm in the appendix part of the FTC report on debt buyers. But anyways, the reason I came to I'm here is because I was planning on going bankrupt, right, until I ran into you guys. And, you know, and now I'm thinking here, you know, it's like, well, really, what the heck am I really gaining by going bankrupt at all?
You're losing.
That's right.
You're sitting on a pile of money.
Nothing, right? If I were to ask the lawyer that, they would tell me that. Well, outside of the fact that, yeah, they're going to get all those debt, all those people off my back, but yet at the same time, it doesn't.
Yeah, and you're going
to
pay to
there's
get
not
them
anything
off your
they
back
can do
instead
to
of instead of you being paid to get them off your back. See, there's
right.
a difference.
Now,
when you have a lawyer do that, you pay them to get rid of the stuff. You do it yourself, they pay you to get rid of the stuff. Isn't that a better
right,
deal?
Now, well,
instead of money
well,
going out, it's coming in?
Yeah, well, that's what, like, opened my eyes here, you know what I mean?
There
and,
you
know, like, my brother has been leading me for a while into, you know, for months now, you know, like, I know this has been coming. I won't go into all the circumstances how I ended up here, but this is where I'm at. Now, I haven't defaulted on anything yet, but, like, next month will be it. You know, I just paid my income taxes and stuff, and I'm going to be out of money. And I'm going to, you know, I'm going to miss paying on a credit card. And at that point, you know, I guess I'll be in default, right? Now, should I just let them come after me and just, like, welcome these phone calls at this point then? And
you
and
need to get into the website and start studying.
Well, I have been reading. I have been, like I said,
okay.
in the FTC report right now. I've read a little bit about the credit card report. But, see, I had this bankruptcy thing in my head, and I don't really see much about bankruptcy in here, you know.
Because
right.
it's not,
okay.
we don't use it.
Right, right.
Bankruptcy is
saying,
just another repayment plan. Why do you want a repayment plan?
Well, I was going Chapter 7, so I would.
If they allow you to. It's
yeah,
not
according
like you can
to
just
the lawyer,
it.
I've already talked to a lawyer. According to the lawyer, I can go Chapter 7 here. I'm in pretty well, my situation, I can definitely go Chapter 7. I live like a pauper.
I like that.
You know,
that's good. All right, just checking.
You know,
sure.
I'm on a
yeah,
pension. There's not much, you know, I've been forced into this credit card thing, you know, because of circumstances that happen with losing a job and this kind of stuff, you know.
Look,
right.
Listen
well,
a second.
Many of us know all about that. That's common.
Yeah.
Common situation.
Right. I'm not even bringing up the house yet because that's really what got me into all of, well, how, somewhat of how I got here before everything bad happened was is really getting screwed on a refinance that I got stuck with an 8.375 mortgage.
Oh,
and that's what really,
Lord.
Yeah. And, I, and these fuckers won't negotiate. This is like the third bank that's bought my mortgage. And, you know, they won't even talk to you about, you know, of,
not when they're raking
getting
in that,
that
kind of
adjusted.
Money, no.
You know, and I have so much credit card debt that I can't get a loan. You know, I can't, you know, I can't refinance now at this point. You know,
right.
so I'm
okay,
stuck.
Well, to answer your question, what you need to do is you need to start studying the beating credit card section and the taking their money sections in the website.
Right, I haven't gotten to the taking their money part yet.
All right.
Hey, Dave,
well,
I've got one question for him first. Do you own your car without a loan?
Yes, I own just...
Do you have a bank account?
I got a credit union account.
Well, let me
There's
tell you.
There's not much
the
in it right now. Like I said, I just
matter.
Got done paying my income tax.
Listen, what you need to do is go into the section on protecting your money, because you still have time before they – once you default on your credit card, there's a thing called universal default. Once one of them goes, they all go at once.
Right,
and even
right.
If you
I realize
have a little
that.
Bit of,
well, that's how
you
I
have
had
a little,
it planned anyway.
Hang on.
Hey, one at a time, one at a time. Listen to John.
If you have a little bit of credit left on any of them, you can use that to go ahead and form your LLC that you're going to stick your car into to divest yourself of your personal interest in it. That way, they when they do an asset search on you, they won't see that you own something that they can have the sheriff come and take away. It's very important that you do that now before you default, okay? If you have a bank account, you want to close that bank account in your personal name, and then you want to open up a bank account in the name of your LLC to divest yourself of your personal ownership in any money that you have in it or may have in it, such as when you sue these companies and collect checks for suing them under FDCPA. You have a way to cash it and keep it separate from you having a personal interest in it. It's very important that you do this now, where you have, if you have a little bit of credit line left on your credit cards, where they're going to pay for that to happen for you. It's kind of like when the bank gets people to make trial payments in a loan modification, so the bank can use that money to foreclose on them. Same type of idea. So if you go ahead and do this now, you will protect your vehicle so they can't take it, because you don't want to lose that. It's very easy to do, and it's spelled out on the protecting your money section. And if you have questions, make sure you post them on the form. There's some
moderators. Well, I've had a business before. That was part of how I, in fact, one of the credit cards that's closed, I'm still paying from the business that I had all the way back from 2004. I've got like 35 grand debt and just credit card debt.
This is separate from a business. This is just a holding company to hold your assets that you have that the credit card company will be glad to take away from you if you have them in your own name.
So even though my car, well, that's the benefit of going bankrupt. See, my brother, it's like, Mark, just get it done with, you know, that type of thing. But, see, I got all the time in the world. I'm basically retired. So all I have time to do is study, you know what I mean?
And go to the courthouse and file lawsuits.
Yeah.
So you just showed you how to set things
car.
Up in the beginning.
So, yeah, I was going to do that last. So you're saying go ahead and get – see, I didn't realize that. That's really good
cannot
advice.
First. You cannot reallocate your assets after you're in default without it being called, like, avoidance of paying your debts. If you do it ahead of time, do you just refer to it as estate planning purposes? There's nothing
okay.
wrong with
and your information in that section explains pretty easily how to do this. You said
it
was
tells
pretty
you
easy.
How to it tells you how to form the personal LLC, and then if you have questions about your car, generally you can go down to the car registration bureau and tell them that you're and you fill out the back of your title where you're selling the car to the LLC. And then the LLC
is
takes
all explained
out
explained in that section.
It should be, if
yep.
not posted
yeah.
in the form, someone will answer it. And then your LLC owns the vehicle, but your car insurance is based on the driver, you with your driver's license, not on the vehicle. Okay, the vehicle is secondary to it. So the car can be owned by the LLC, but you take out insurance for you to be able to drive the car. That's not a problem. State Farm, Progressive, all of them will do that for you.
Right, well, I already have insurance.
No, but you're missing what I'm
well,
saying.
Well, but it'll be different because the car will be owned by the LLC. You won't be the owner
right.
of it.
Yeah.
Oh,
and
so
then on
I
your
have
policy,
to get the insurance. I'd have to get the car insurance through the LLC?
No. The LLC owns the vehicle. You have insurance. The insurance is in your name to drive that vehicle. The LLC is listed as an additional insured on the insurance policy. And when you go to see your car insurance agent. They can go up and set the new policy up for you to start as soon as the old policy, you know, they can, if the day you transfer the title, you transfer the insurance from one to the other, you'll get a credit back from what you haven't used in the one with you owning it, and you can apply that to the new policy.
Hmm. Wow.
Easy.
All that stuff's in the website there for you. So
well,
you just
got to
get in there and do your studying.
Yeah, well, my main thing is like, okay, so I need to delay here a little bit more than for the sake of
our you just need to move quicker.
I've got some, I've got a little cash put on to the side where I can delay this enough to do what you guys are saying. I got to have time to study it, know what I'm doing before I just jump into it. So
You can find your LLC in a day.
Yep,
that's it.
But I'm going to have to get in there and read about it first before I do that. Well, thank you so much. I'm sure I'll be on these calls again because I'm a go-getter, and I'll tell you what, I'm going to, you know, I got to you guys through the sovereign society type guys, the sovereign citizens, and I'm the type of guy that like that, like one of those mountain men that'll go in the courtroom and scream back at the judge.
Yeah.
Well, we are too.
So I'm not afraid of them at all. You know, I love the idea of this. I can't stand the fact that they invent money out of thin air in the first place and that I owe them. I love the idea of suing them.
Yeah. That's good. It's the only way
All right, we got to keep moving here. We got a lot more callers tonight.
All right, you guys have a great evening. Thank you so much.
You too, buddy.
You bet. Thank you. All right, let's go to 415. You have been unmuted. Go ahead, please.
Thank you for taking my call. And first of all, thank all of you guys. You guys are wonderful. This is Steve, and I was calling to ask you guys. I had sent my alleged servicer a qualified written request to the tune of about 14 pages. I sent this to them in January. They sent me a note in February telling me that they needed more time to respond, and it's already April and they have not responded. So I was wondering, is there any, what would you guys suggest as far as any type of recourse, or what are the statutes on that, or how can I be pointed in the right direction for that?
Here's the problem you have. I say this to everybody. Qualified written request is not 14 pages long. That's more like a request for production and admissions, okay? So the problem you have is if you try to sue them for not responding, okay, the Dodd-Frank Act was changed to reflect 30 days. They got to answer within 30 days, not respond and acknowledge. They got to acknowledge within 20 or 10 and respond completely within 30, right? The problem is your qualified written request has to be a qualified written request. If it's anything outside that parameter, no, 14 pages is not a qualified written request. A qualified written request is a simple, basically saying, listen, I don't agree with last month's mortgage payment or the hike in the interest rate or the escrow account that was taken or the insurance payment. That's all it is. It's not 50 million questions. So if it doesn't fall within that parameter, a judge can look at you and say, sorry, that does not fall. You can look it up. I got cases that are on the site that tells you specifically a qualified written request is a dispute over a charge that your servicer has got on your account. Escrow, they pulled too much money, not enough money, You can ask for the world as long as you include the correct disputed item in there. What are you disputing on your account?
Gotcha.
Okay? Just remember that. And I have it. Go look in the form. On the qualified written request inside, I explain it very in-depth. In the site about what to do and what not to do. Now, we do have I think it's 17 pages, but that's more like interrogatories, man. You might as well just be giving them something in court, you know. But believe it or not, a lot of our members get some questions answered out of that stuff. It's unreal that they actually go ahead and respond to it. You know, so just bear that in mind. That's all I'm saying. Just bear that in mind. That's all.
Okay. So basically, maybe what I should do is just go ahead and send them something a little more simpler and start all over?
Yeah. What I say you do is you go to the website and you read up on exactly that qualified written request. And then you go there. That's the best thing I could tell you to do, man.
Okay. That's great. Thank you, guys. You guys are wonderful.
Learn exactly what it entails and how to do it properly so that when you do it, then you know you're getting it done the right way.
Yeah, I don't want you to get in trouble. That's the reason I'm pointing that out to you. I just don't want you to get in trouble.
And I appreciate that because I'm still new at this, and I will take any suggestions. I will take any suggestions because I know you guys are awesome. Thanks.
Gotcha.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Take care, guys. Bye-bye
now. You bet. You too.
All right, Kyle.
All right. Let's go back. We've got another caller from 847. 847,
hello.
You've been unmuted. Go ahead. Good evening.
All right. This is Jack.
Hi, Jack.
I just I got a notice of motion. I've been in foreclosure with Citibank for about 3-4 years, and I guess you kind of answered the question is going to, I guess maybe, I've been looking at foreclosure bash and stuff like that, but I've got order of summary judgment. They're trying to end this on me. So I just want some, I just was wondering what I should study in your forums and whatever, or foreclosure bash.
Do a search on the site and on the forum both for a motion in opposition to summary judgment.
Motion in opposition?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, hold on. You said an order. Did you mean a motion?
Order, but he does mean a motion,
says,
right?
It says order for summary judgment against me.
From the court?
It's in the court, yeah.
No.
Listen to Larry. listen. Yeah.
Is it from the judge? Did the judge sign it?
No.
Is it a proposed
order?
It's
probably the motion with the attached proposed order. That's what I would think it is, yeah.
Yep.
You got to be very careful of exactly what you're looking at and what it means.
Yeah.
Okay, so it has certificate of service, as you know what that is, I guess.
Yeah.
At the very beginning of it, does it say motion for summary judgment and brief or memorandum in support?
No, it just in bold type it says defendant of me, and then in the middle it says notice of motion, and then I can read you a little paragraph of this.
Well,
if you want.
No, the title. We're looking for the title. You've got the styling, which is so and so versus so and so, and the case number and stuff like that. That's called the styling of a case. Then underneath that, at the beginning of the document, there's a title. You said notice of motion for what? What's the rest of it?
And then it says to the attached list. But that's for my condo association and me that they're suing, or
right,
or and that it says, and then it, below that it just says on June 20th, 1:30 p.m. Counsel may be heard for attorney for the claimant shall appear before the honorable presiding judge or any judge sitting in courtroom Lake County Courthouse North County Street Waukegan motion. For summary judgment, motion to
there you go. There you go, right there. It's a motion for summary judgment. That's what we were looking for.
Right. Okay.
Okay. So they put in a motion, and you need to oppose that.
Okay. All right. So then
and you only
have
a notice for hearing.
I'm sorry.
I said you only have so many days to do it.
Right. It says June 20th is when I have to be in court.
But did they just file that? Did you just get your copy of it in the mail?
I just got it Saturday.
All right. Well, then you need to be on it. What you've got to do is you have to draft your opposition to their motion for summary judgment to argue that.
Okay.
Because if you don't argue it, the court's going to view that as, well, if you don't argue it, you must agree, so they'll grant summary judgment to them of foreclosure.
Okay.
So you just got to think about the process that you're in. They sue you, and then you need to respond. You need to argue. That's what goes on with the court. Both sides are arguing. One side puts something in, the other side argues it. That side files something, then the other side argues it. So they put a motion in for summary judgment to foreclose on your property. You
exactly.
have to oppose that, and then when you put your opposition in, then they can respond to your opposition. Then it
okay.
goes to the court for a decision.
So then that means
you have to understand the process of how to deal with a motion for summary judgment.
Okay. Then that's my next question. I've had an attorney, and he was talking to me. He knew that this was going to happen. So he's talking about doing a chain of title and getting a court reporter, and I'm just wondering where I can go to learn about this on your site, chain of title, to give him some things, too.
I don't understand
so
what he means by doing a chain
well,
of
he's
title.
He's talking about an idol. He wants to do
well,
an
that's what I was wondering.
Yeah, that's other terminology. And we do those at whatliesinyourmortgage.com. So you can go there, and then he can, you know, you can email Jeff or get going and get one started. But, you know, at this, all he's got to do right now, to stop a summary judgment, he's got to do a motion in opposition to the summary judgment. I'm assuming it's a premature summary judgment. It's probably some facts in dispute still. And then all you do is attach an affidavit with those disputed facts. You're done. The court can't award it because those are still in dispute. And if they do award it, well, then you got an easy appeal.
So attach an assignment, okay.
No. I said no, I messed up.
Affidavit
of disputed facts.
And attach an affidavit, okay.
Of disputed facts.
Your attorney should understand this if he's...
Oh,
yeah,
what kind of attorney
do
you got? Like a freaking car wreck attorney or something? What does this guy do?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, he's trying to learn it and, you know,
oh,
I mean...
Boy.
I mean...
No, that's okay. Sometimes that's the best kind. You know that, Dave.
You know, he was like the only one that I could find that would be alternative. Everybody else said, "Well, you'll be foreclosed," you know, and
right.
what are you doing this for? And I mean, he was more alternative than most of them.
He was willing
you know.
To put up an argument.
Yeah, kind of a, but he's not an aggressive attorney, but you know. But he knows
well,
he wants.
Then you
got to
learn to be aggressive and push him.
That's why I joined your site because I'm trying
right.
to push him along and
uh-huh.
so I don't know which way to turn, but I'm just trying to do my homework here to try to give things to him or you know. So I don't know what to tell
well,
you.
Yeah, what lies in your mortgage? You can go there and we do audits. Jeff will be and they're pretty fast. So.
So what lies
in your mortgage? What lies in your mortgage?
Okay, go there and what title? What,
follow
where
the
do I
instructions.
Go there?
Follow
okay.
instructions. Yeah, that's always the best. Yeah.
All right, and tell everybody to go to that documentary, "Freedom from Fascism" by Aaron Russo. It's a good.
Yeah,
contract.
I've watched it. It's old. That's good stuff, though.
Oh yeah, I know it is. Right, that's why I'm a non-filer.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
I've been a non-filer for about 13 years now. And so my next question is that I can't file bankruptcy because I don't have, I can't do a modification or anything because they're going to look at my income, which I have no income according to them.
Of course.
So
if you don't want to partake in the system, that means you can't use any part of their system.
Right.
Just remember that. I always tell that to people. Patriots are crazy in their head. Oh, I want to use this part of it, but not that part of it. It doesn't work that way. You give it
right.
all up, or you give none of it up. But you can't be half and half.
Exactly right. So I'm just, you know, I might lose
just remember
myself.
That.
Right. So you have to, what decision you make, you have to live with it. So.
Exactly.
Okay, bye. See ya. Thanks a lot.
All right, guys. Have a good night. Remember, what lies in your mortgage? Go check it out. That'll help you guys out a little bit anyway.
Okay, cool. Thanks.
All right, pal.
All right. Jesse, can't believe this happened, but I just got the second call today from a debt collector, and that makes 100 calls from them.
Nice.
Man, I can't believe it. And I thought he'd quit calling me. Okay, we're going to go to 562. You have been unmuted. 562?
Yep, it's me. Can you hear me?
Go ahead.
Okay, hi. This is Lara, and I'm calling with a few questions. I did get the debt validation letter, Dave, that you sent me last night. Thank you for that.
Okay, good. Sure.
I have one last question on it, though. You're mentioning that we have 30 days from the receipt of the letter to send it. Do we reference that anywhere in the letter? Because I don't see it anywhere in the letter.
No.
Mm-hmm.
No. No. You want to make note of the date that you received the first letter, but then when you send yours certified mail, you obviously have a postal receipt when you send it out, and that's why you put the certified mail number on the bottom of the letter, so that ties that to the receipt that you get for that certified mail at the post office showing you sent that.
Right,
within that
30
days.
Just that since, you know, obviously we can receive it, you know, you guys talked about how sometimes it can be dated one day but then sent out much later than that, and so
It goes by your date of receipt, so you make a note, what day did I receive this, whenever you get a communication from these people. And that's something for everybody to learn and pay attention to. Always make notations, and whatever you do, don't write on the envelope, don't write on the communication that's in it. Never spoil evidence by doing that, and always save the envelopes. Always. You know, paperclip it to the letter, so you got it.
Yeah, that's what I'm
and
doing.
I just use a sticky note. I put a sticky note on it, and I put received, you know, 4/13/14 or something like that.
Right, that's what I'm starting to do now. I was just looking at the first paragraph where it says this letter is being sent to you in response to a notice sent to me on, and the date there, I would just reference the date that they have in their letter.
That's
right?
The date on
not
their letter,
the day
right.
I received.
Mm-hmm.
Right,
yep.
Okay. Yep. And so I'm about ready to send this out. But what you said earlier on this call brought up a question that I wanted to clarify, which was that you guys said validation versus verification, and it's just semantics that it means the same. But in this debt validation letter, the second paragraph actually says this is not a request for verification or proof of my mailing address, but a request for validation made pursuant to the above-named title and section.
Mm-hmm.
Respectfully requested that your offices provide me with complete evidence that I have an illegal obligation. So in that paragraph, it actually is distinguishing. So could you clarify that for me? Because
it's easy to clarify. It's all meaningless.
Pardon me?
It's just word salad. It's garbage.
Yeah.
But
okay. Don't worry about it. Send it.
Yeah. It's enough to invoke your rights. That's the important thing.
Okay. Got it. All right. And then my next
question
is...
All right.
I just want to make sure I'm, you know, it's the first time I'm having to send it, and it's ironic because I've actually been going through this for about 4 years now. So my next question is this. Maybe you guys can shed some light on it for me. I have a Countrywide B of A mortgage, and
I'm sorry.
Went through, sorry? Hello?
I said I'm sorry.
Yeah.
That you had a Countrywide.
Well,
go ahead.
Yeah, and so I had actually joined your site a while back when I was looking for options, and then shortly after I got a notice of trustee sale, I opted to do a short sale on the property, which dragged things out for quite a bit. During that period of time, I actually found a private lender that ended up, he was advertising, and about 2,000 of us actually signed up for his program, where he had promised to reduce our mortgages by a certain percentage. He did an administrative process, which was unsuccessful. During that period of time, though, he actually put all of our properties in a bankruptcy. I think it's a Chapter 11 at the moment. And that has actually protected my property for quite a while now. Right. Now, the thing is during that time as well, B of A tried to foreclose two years straight. You know, they did a year, they were unsuccessful. They did another year, they were unsuccessful. Part of it was me defending it. I was actually trying to do a loan mod. It was all kind of crazy. Then when this lender came in and he put the properties in the BK, it was protected. And then when they ran out of time last year of a second attempt for a whole year, then the guy who I was, you know, in touch with in this private lender's offices said, okay, they cannot now try to do any more action while the property's in the BK. Now the lender, apparently he has had difficulty with all these banks of giving up their, you know, they're still trying to pursue the properties, and now he is actually under scrutiny as well, and so he is potentially a bank fraudster himself. So right now I'm completely up in the air, and now B of A has changed servicers to RCS, which is why I am sending this debt validation letter out. I've heard different things now from attorneys, from friends even. Some say don't mention to them that it's in the BK at all. Just send them the debt validation letter. Others have said let them know it's in the BK because it's protected. But then they've told me that if they file for relief of stay, that since the guy is right now awaiting trial, no one is attending to the BK, although it is still active, and I know there has been no relief of stay on my property. They're saying that if they file for relief of stay and they are able to pull it out because no one's attending it, that I could not use a bankruptcy for another 2 years to try to protect the property. So that's my short version. It's a very long story.
Yeah, that's incorrect, and we don't. I can't address all those questions because I don't know all the answers to every one of them, but
right.
I know for sure mm-hmm. that a BK, you didn't file BK, he filed BK.
Right.
See, the problem that I see is the house is probably no longer in your name. Correct?
It is, but it isn't because apparently
no,
something
it is or
did.
It's not. It can't be is and is not. It's one or the other.
Mm-hmm. It's in a trust, actually.
That's what I thought.
Not,
so it's not in your name.
Yeah.
That's why he filed a Chapter 11. That's a smart move. If you can do it and get mm-hmm. away with it, Chapter 11 is a great thing. It's basically a strategy that's been used by corporations for years. Not a big deal. My point is that mm-hmm. now, because it's not in your name, if you were to file a bankruptcy, it would have no protection.
Got it. Okay, yeah. You know,
see, it's
got to
come back out from the trust. It's got to be mm-hmm. out of the trust, back in your name, so then you could be afforded the protection on the property.
Got it. Okay. And actually, he is in the first trustee position. You know, when he took over all this, he filed the records
Forget
all the terminology, but he's in the first trustee position, and there have been properties that other banks have tried that have foreclosed on other participants, and then they weren't able to sell the properties because the title is clouded. And so until he gets his trial later this year, I feel like I'm in limbo land, but I also, you know, now I'm having to respond to this new servicer. So would you recommend that I just continue my path of sending the debt validation letter? They've actually also filed an NOD the following week after I got this, you know, I guess, done letter.
I can't recommend anything because I don't know the whole case. But at the end of the day,
okay.
I do recommend that you get control of your property. That I do recommend.
Mm-hmm.
Don't let anybody else do it. So it can be taken out of the trust, but back in
mm-hmm.
your name, and that way you deal with them one-on-one using our system, and you're going to be fine.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But when
but
you don't have control, you're limited options.
Right. But if I told the new servicer that it is in this BK right now, which it is currently technically still protected,
they'd probably leave you alone.
They would probably leave me alone. It just I'm concerned. Okay, but what you said right there was if then I got control back in my name, then I could technically still use a BK even if they filed a relief of stay out of the other BK.
That BK. That's right.
Right.
Absolutely.
Okay. That sheds some good light on there. And then last question, really. I mean, you guys always say you're not attorneys, you know, consult with an attorney before doing anything. I don't have an attorney at the moment, but because this is such a convoluted case, I mean, my goal was to go to your site. Really.
Yeah, you don't
right?
You don't
okay.
want one.
I was going to say, my goal was to go through your site and just slam it through. But then the other thought, you know, that I had was, I mean, if I could get a loan modification that I could live with, this has been going on for so long that I'm just deadbeat tired of all of it altogether. So I guess my, you know, I have two options, is to either try to work with them or really just step away from it and take them to court, right, or file the federal lawsuit that you guys talk about doing.
You got a lot of options.
Yeah,
none
too
of
many.
Them are exercisable. No, none of them are exercisable, none of them, until you get that out of that trust.
Okay, all right.
So that's the very first thing you need to worry about.
Okay. Okay.
And that's a fact. Don't worry about nothing else till you get out of that thing.
All right. Well, but I still do want to send this debt validation letter
send it out.
To
that's
them.
Not a problem.
Right?
Send it out.
Okay. I mean, you.
One, the one thing right, you're missing in commingling things, so don't worry about that. Just what I'm saying to you is get control of your property. So you have control, you're never going to be. You're not going to be able to do what you need to be doing.
So simply by pulling it out of that trust, back in, it'll put it back into my name. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess I'm a little confused about my next steps, but okay, that has clarified some of it. So,
hope that helps.
All right, did I take care of you?
Yeah, like I said, I mean, there's just so many different things swimming in my head as to, I mean, obviously the main thing right now is I want to respond within the 30 days at least, because they've sent me this, you know, this.
That's
I guess
a
15-second
letter. You keep threatening
right.
it. That's a 15-second letter. Get in the mail, be quiet about it, and go get your property.
Okay. No, no.
I don't mean to cut you
home.
Off, but, man, all you do is beat on that stupid letter.
Yeah.
It's a 5-second letter.
No,
it's
I'm not.
It's not
going to
make
I
or break anything.
Okay.
Yes, get it in the mail and forget about it. Just get in the
okay.
mail and forget about the darn thing.
No, I know. It just all just happened in the last 2 weeks, so I'm just making sure
I know.
On the right path.
Yeah, I'd get your
all
property right. out of that damn trust. That's all. That's my biggest, I'm telling you, that's the biggest recommendation I can make.
All right.
Yeah. All right,
okay.
we got to keep moving here. We got a lot of people here.
Yep, go for it. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, let's go to 281. That's down around Houston.
That's right.
Hello.
H-Town.
Yes.
Hello.
You
that's
can
how's
keep
going.
The humidity, thanks.
Yes, absolutely. A couple of questions. Number one, if you send a cease and desist letter, and in the letter you also state to only correspond to me at a particular address, and after that they continue to send mail to you at, so you had two or three addresses, and they send them to all the other addresses as well, is that a FDCPA violation?
No.
No,
you
yes,
can't specify.
No.
There's nothing that states that that you can specify an address and they can send it to you. You can say don't call me and
right.
communicate with me only by mail and give them an address.
Okay.
But there's nothing that gives you the ability to specify the address.
Change. So basically, like saying just send me information to this one address. I can't. You can't do that.
No,
I guess you
no,
can do
no,
it,
there,
but
there,
it's not a
there's
violation.
There's no violation under the FDCPA.
Yeah.
That was
okay,
your question.
Okay, not a violation. Okay,
right.
okay, no violation. Okay. All right, second question is regarding if ABC Company, he has a loan with ABC Company and it's in default, and Company X takes over after that, isn't it going forward from there on, from that point going forward, wouldn't Company X always be considered a debt collector?
Well, was it in default when Company X got it?
Yes. Yes. Yes,
okay.
It was.
Then they would be a debt collector, and anybody forward would be a debt collector as long
debt
as you
collector.
Didn't bring it back current. Correct.
Okay, wait a minute. Okay, so if you brought it back current at some point in time,
well, let's say you went from ABC, X got it, but then you
right.
got together with X and you brought it back to current, so it wasn't in default, okay? Then they, at that point, as long as you have an agreement with them, would then be considered an original creditor. And if somebody else acquired it from them while it was current, then that next entity would be considered an original creditor as well. Here again, it has to go into default and then be transferred for the people down the line to be considered debt collectors.
Right, but let me just be clear with this. So if Company A, I'm with Company A and is in default, Company B takes it over, then they're considered
a debt collector.
Okay.
Yep.
But you're saying if I ever bring a current.
No. That's not what he was saying.
Okay.
I think Dave misunderstood what you said, and I think you're not explaining it correctly. If it was in default while it was transferred from Jesse to David, you defaulted on me, I sold it to David. David is a debt collector. If you bring it current with David, that still does not take the fact that he is a debt collector because he took it while it was under default. Because you bring it current doesn't take the fact that he's a debt collector away from that.
Okay. Okay, that's what I thought. Okay, that was it.
That's
those were my questions.
That's right.
Yeah, that's it. Okay, I appreciate it, guys. Thanks.
All right.
David,
well,
you scumbag debt collector.
Yeah. Yeah.
You didn't know that, did you?
Me and Midland.
You, buddy. That's it. That's right.
I'm me and Midland. Oh, man. Oh,
you're
man.
Not even good enough for Midland. They refused you.
Yeah, well, their MDL didn't like me, that's for sure.
That's right.
All right, let's go to 828. You've been unmuted.
Hey.
Good evening.
Is this me? Yes, sir.
You
this
are
is Gary
up.
Stern. I got good news for you. I got
go for
real
it.
Good news for you. I am Terry Stern. I am running for the clerk of court, which is the foreclosure attorney for Buncombe County, North Carolina. And I'm
That's
gonna
awesome.
Put, yeah. Oh, yeah. You talk about total payback on somebody that allowed 7 foreclosures from Chase, did not enter my default judgments under the Fair Credit Reporting Act, not once, not twice, 3 times. I want all of your viewers and I want all of the callers to go to a simple website. It's Terry4.com. And I am not only running for the clerk of court, but I'm a contender in this thing. According to Elon Call, 18 points ahead.
Wouldn't that be great, man, to have one of our members?
And state that again, exactly. State that where you are.
And you got to understand, in North Carolina, the clerk of court is not only the probate judge, the foreclosure judge, but he schedules the court. And I will not allow these attorneys to be in front of their former law partners ever again. I lost a daughter to their corruption, and it will not happen again.
That's awesome.
Again.
Good for you, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, what county are you
in? I am in the
Tell us where we could go. What county?
Buncombe County, North Carolina, the 28th Judicial District of Western North Carolina. And I have a huge following. The guy that I'm running against has no Facebook. My Facebook, as right now, everybody go to my website and like my Facebook. We have over 400 members right now. We just started Saturday with the Facebook.
That's
and
awesome,
I mean,
man.
Oh yeah, I'm after him. I am after him. He has allowed Chase, and some of the things that I have learned recently. He allowed nearly a quarter of a million dollars to be lost by a ward. And in case people don't know what a ward is, that's an incompetent person that a guardian that's in charge of is handling their affairs. He allowed it. I just found this out yet last night, and I've got the paperwork. I'm going to the papers in the morning with it because I've had some trouble with the media up here. Our media is very backward, and they just don't understand. They think that I'm just like, oh, this guy that got foreclosed 7 times. But, you know, there's something to my thing because I went and I made $38,000 worth of payments to these people, and Chase and EMC lost every one of my payments. They're still striking my credit for the full amount. So I am, you know, not only you know, I need to join y'all's side. I will in the next couple of days. But I am like a crusader for justice in Buncombe County.
That's good. And
And I will be the foreclosure judge. I mean, I'm turning out such a vote and for the common people. The common people are going to rise up, you know, in this
well,
county.
Well, people have got to step up, and you're doing it. Congratulations.
That's right.
Oh,
good job.
I am, and I will be, even though I don't have a law license, like y'all are talking about. I listen to y'all's calls every week, and I hear these people that don't understand what's going on and, like, you know, you need to answer this. You've got to do this. And I know exactly what you're talking about. I was like, oh, yes, that's just so important that you respond to it correctly. And, I mean, you have to, like, you know, on a motion sent to you in North Carolina, you have 20 days. You have something served on, you have 30 days. And, geez, you know, I've learned so much. And, you know, I actually, in the LSATs, I missed 8 questions on the LSAT. You know, so I know the law. I know the law so well. But, you know, the attorneys are against me, and the establishment, you know, the media is against me now because,
well, sure.
You know, I have turned out such a vote, and there has been such an uproar about the different things that Stephen D. Cogburn has done to the people of this community. I mean,
fight the fight. You're doing a great job.
I am fighting the fight. I am fighting the fight every day. I start at 5:30 in the morning. I end way after midnight. And, I mean, I y'all inspire me, but I hope everybody on the call, you know, understands, you know, we need to bring justice. And the only way we're going to bring justice is with, like, people from me running for the clerk of court. And the clerk of court here is foreclosures here.
Yeah.
You know, I not only hear foreclosures, but I take care of the probate. And I'll be such a caring advocate for the people. That's so important to me, that the people of this county and their rights are respected. Because our clerk, Stephen Cogburn, has done so much heinous stuff against the folks of Buncombe County. It's just, it curls my toenails to hear the stories after stories after stories I hear of, there was an old-time lawyer that all he did was wills and estates and stuff, and he saved $600,000 in his lifetime. He had his house, and he had a cabin up in Roan Mountain, North Carolina, and they let some bankers come in and take over his estate and invest his money that should have been invested in the banks. You know, it should have been in a bank account, but it was invested in risky stock stuff, and they lost $248,000. And I'm going to the papers with that in the morning, so that should be really good. But I was hoping for the good news.
Keep us informed of how things go, but we got to keep moving on here. We have more people
that
got questions.
Y'all need to move on, and y'all got folks that need y'all to, you know, Lord knows you got folks that need your help, you know, because I've been foreclosed on 7 times myself. And, you know what, I'm standing on the same piece of property, and I still own it. I still own it. They haven't put me off of it yet. You know, and I try to pay them, and they won't pay me.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks. Y'all have a good evening. Bye.
You bet.
Okay,
you
buddy.
Too. Thank you. Now, there's somebody that's stepping up. People got to do that. All right, let's go to 816.
Hi, everybody. How you doing?
Good evening,
man. Doing good. How are you?
Hey, Dave. Real quick, are you going to be able to put a link on the website as to your book that you had read on Monday nights?
Actually, Jeff has that on his site, voidjudgments.net.
Okay. I'll go to that and I'll download that. I'm excited about handing that out to everybody. I have a real quick question. Trying to do this quick. My servicer, which I was in default with, and by default I mean late more than one day repeatedly, never had a timely payment with them for 8 years. the servicer transferred the servicing rights to Green Tree, and at that point they had the servicing rights, were acted as a debt collector, and what I'm assuming their capacity was, for approximately 6 months before I was listening to you, and then I wrote the QWR. Now, here's the question. If I didn't get that letter off within the first 30 days, do they still have the right to make collection activity during the time period before they send me the non-validation letter? Because, you know, they sent me the schedule and they sent me what was recorded in the county office. They even had the gall to send me the original note without any launches or anything on it. So the question is, can they continue their collection practices if I didn't get it out within the 30 days?
The FDCPA says that if you don't respond within 30 days and make your request for validation, or as they say, verification, within 30 days of your receipt of the first notice, then they can continue collection activity. And you don't have a violation on that.
Okay. Yeah. So that was a lot of time wasted on that. The cell phone, they had 35 calls, 3 messages, 1 including that saying that they were going to proceed with further actions, and then they clarified they were going to accelerate the note in 20 days. They screwed up the accounting. The checks actually went in. They did not apply them. It's 2 different notes. They actually, or 2 different accounts. They actually applied both payments to 1. They screwed it up. But in any case, they were making phone calls on their screw up, even after I wrote them a certified letter explaining to them what they did. Now, the Cell Phone Collection Practices Act, can I make a case against them on that? For the 35 calls?
Well, first of all, did you give them consent to call the number?
Never did.
You never did? They just...
Never did.
The phone number before was a landline or something?
Correct. And that was
Right. So they're calling the cell phone. Now, were they calling it using an automated dialer?
They did, and I've actually found case law. A gentleman, I believe it was in Florida.
Well, no. Wait a minute.
Okay.
Did they call your phone using an automated dialer?
Yes.
Okay.
It was a phone.
Can,
it was a
you
system
can,
that was
you can show
of the automated. Right.
It was what?
It was a system that was capable of making the automated calls, and I actually
you're getting the language, but I'm just saying, did they do that with you? How can you show that they did that? Have you got a way you can show that? Did you answer the calls? Was there a delay? Did you say hello before somebody comes on?
The actual delays were on the phone, on the recording, and they never one time said that they were debt collectors.
Okay. So they left an automated message.
Yes. Well, it wasn't automated. A voicemail. There was no actual human voice on this, nor were there a recorded.
That's an automated message.
Okay.
You've got to understand your terminology. If it was a live person, that's different. If they call and they leave an automated message, then that's a violation.
Awesome. Yeah, I think I'm in fifth grade now since I've been with you guys for the last 2 months. I've gone from third grade to fifth grade.
Okay,
so,
well, keep going on that TCPA takedown. All this kind of detail stuff is in there, fully understanding where the violations actually occur, what triggers a violation and what doesn't. And I can tell you're picking up on the language because you used the language there. It was ATDS capable, but here again, you got to look at the circumstances. What do you know? Because you're going to have to allege it properly when you write your complaint.
Okay, so you would actually drop the attempts to collect the debt from them during the QWR period for the refi attempts and the letters that they sent. They actually told me I had no insurance on the properties and all this other stuff. They actually I think I stirred the pot. But okay.
Well, that's not going to have anything to do with your TCPA. You understand that, right?
Correct. Correct. Yeah,
yeah,
that
okay.
was just
okay.
The collection activities must stop under the 15-1692.
Yeah.
So, okay.
If you tell them to stop, they have to stop calling. Correct.
Right. Well, they never had my express or otherwise consent. So
right. Okay.
Awesome,
well,
man.
It's
hey,
a violation from the get-go when they called you using ATDS capable equipment, right?
Right, exactly. Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm having a lot of problems getting on Talk Shoe with you, Dave, on Monday nights. That's not want me to get in there, but
huh.
I don't know how that's not something.
We've had plenty
can...
other people on there. Keep trying. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah,
use your other hand to dial
weekly.
Yeah. Use your other hand to dial, and don't use the automated dialer. Just dial it by hand. Maybe you'll have better luck.
I'll turn my head to the right instead
okay.
of the left.
There you
All
go.
All right, guys. Thanks. Keep up good work.
All right. You bet. Thanks. See, we got to get these guys away from these automated dialers trying to call me on Talk Show on Monday nights. Let's go to 814. 814, you're unmuted. Go ahead, please.
Hey, how are you? Can you hear me?
Good. Yes, we can hear you just fine.
I haven't really had a chance to check out what you're all about, but I'm curious, have you guys been getting into any defense as far as going up against the actual law firms, you know, the
yeah.
mill firms?
They're my favorite.
Do that all the time. Yeah. Yeah.
Their checks clear the bank, too.
Yep.
I know, because I've deposited them.
Uh-huh.
In other words, yes,
right,
we do that.
Right, but when you say that you've obviously engaged, you know, what in cases with them, not just in like, you know, these phone called, you know, debt collection issues, but other issues, for example, you know, violations of 11 USC and what have you. I mean, have you been actually successful, you know,
No, we don't get into that. We work under the consumer protection statutes. That's what we focus on. FDCPA, FCRA, TCPA.
Mhm.
We don't.
Okay,
we don't
so your group
really
hasn't actually
get
been getting involved with going after the law firms.
Well, under the consumer protection statutes, yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Under the what?
Under the consumer protection statutes, the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, the Fair Credit Reporting Act, the Telephone Consumer Protection Act, when they,
right.
You know, we litigate under those statutes. Against lawyers at times, yes, absolutely.
Against
law
firms.
If they violate the law, we're gonna take them on.
Yeah. All right, so when they are doing things like fabricating documents and, you know, filing documents that they know are obviously fraudulent, are, you know, fabricated, you're actually...
Well,
you're,
I'm assuming
members
you're
are actually
talking
engaging.
About foreclosures.
Well, no, it's just, well, yeah, but, it, you know, it's foreclosure, assuming that it was a valid foreclosure case in the first place.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, you're talking about fabricating documents and all that kind of stuff. There is no private right of action for you to go and sue a lawyer for fabricating a document.
I wouldn't say
but
that.
But if it's in violation.
Well,
that's what you just said, and that's not
would,
true.
There, let me
yeah,
rephrase that. There would be some, but these that's not what we delve into. We don't get into dealing with that per se, going specifically after them. We deal with things like the foreclosures, people being sued over credit cards, people being their rights being violated by the collectors.
Okay, but you said foreclosure. You said foreclosure. Obviously, it's a lot different than a credit card. What do you mean
right.
by foreclosure? What do you
foreclosure defense?
Right, but that's when a case is actually filed in a court and you know it's already moved forward. But if the law firm was found to have fabricated and falsified,
yeah. Jesse, you wanna pick that up and
yeah,
explain?
Yeah, I don't understand your question. That's if you're using
yeah.
false documentation. First, you got to prove it. You can't just say, "Well, it's false. I'm gonna sue you." You got to prove it was false. You got to prove it was. And how do you do that? I'm in the process of depositions in New York over an assignment that was done that I know through Bank of America.
It wasn't done by the law firm. It was done by Bank of America.
Well, no, and
so,
no,
I'm
in some
go
cases,
after them.
For
That's
example, a legal in this particular case, the senior partner was the one that actually fabricated the assignment.
Well, that's fraud upon the court.
Right. Well, that's
a whole different
saying.
Animal, but
are
it
your...
also falls under the FDCPA. I don't need to go to 11 U.S.C. I go right to the FDCPA, 1692, you're done. I get you right there. That's my point. But you still got to prove it happened. You still got to prove he did it, just no different than David Stern. I had David Stern at my personal last trial, sitting on the phone, ready to tell the court that all he would do is fabricate, and watch what I'm going to say. He would prepare these assignments and send them to the plaintiff.
Right. But you're going after the law firm in
state
or federal?
You didn't listen. You would not have just said, right, but you'd have said, what? Listen to what I just said.
I couldn't understand what you said. I'm sorry, what did you say?
David Stern, the famous David
right.
Stern, was on the phone ready for me to depose him at my last trial. And
right.
his exact testimony was going to be this. I prepared the assignments and sent them to the plaintiffs. Think how deep of a statement that is.
Right. He had no authority to prepare the assignments.
Well, sure he did. Absolutely he did. Why wouldn't he? No,
well,
if
he's not hired by the actual real party in interest.
But it doesn't matter. He's hired by the plaintiff. You missed the whole point.
Well, no. If the plaintiff is not the real party in interest, if they can't bring an action, that's the whole point. If you're not the real party in interest,
you missed the point.
You
missed the whole
again.
Point. You missed the point. Completely blew right over top of your head. He would send an assignment to the plaintiff. So the plaintiff would fill in all the blanks to whatever fit their needs.
Right, I understand
That's the
that.
Point.
Right.
If you understood it, you didn't say it. That's the major impact. That ended the case.
Yeah.
It's still
right,
over.
But it has nothing to do with what I'm asking you.
He
fabricated. Well, you need to clarify what it is you're asking because we're not understanding.
Right.
He fabricated, right? He fabricated this assignment. He fabricated it. I still can't go after him. Because all his testimony is, listen, I would produce the assignment, I'd get it all ready, and I'd send it off to the plaintiff. The plaintiff themselves fabricated the false information, not the attorney.
Right, but usually these firms are hired by LPS, DocSec, DocX, third-party outsourced entities that are,
Correct.
You know, giving them the, little screenshot to, hey, you know, fabricate to, you know, populate this particular assignment to fill
there
it
There you go.
Gap.
That's a big difference. When
right.
we say fabricate, populate, prepare, those are all different terms. They all mean different things.
Right, I
so,
understand. I'm a 30-year federal litigation. I'm a criminal paralegal. I get all that stuff.
So,
but
exactly.
what I'm saying is that, I'm 30 years, so I've been in law for a long time, and I understand that stuff.
I'm sorry,
I'm
I would have killed myself if I did that for 30 years.
Well,
poor girl,
I tried to retire. I was in the process of retiring and got, you know, roped right back into it without wanting to be. But so, the thing with this is now I'm going to go out to the jugulars of the law firm because they were completely, way, way wrong. And that's
okay.
what
but
I'm
you can
after
still go
now.
After him under the FDCPA. You don't need to go after him for anything else.
Right.
They
but
are
what I'm thinking,
collector.
If you stay in state, FDCPA, you're going to have to
no,
go
to federal.
No, you go federal.
You're not staying in state. You go to federal.
Right. But if you want to go after them for their bar ethics and things like that, you want to stay within the state. You can't go after violations of the bar and stuff like that in a federal forum. You want to stay in the
yes,
state.
Yes, you can. Yes, you can. If you look at the local rules in the federal court, many times you'll find that the local rules refer to the fact that they adopt the rules of professional conduct within the state. And if you're in a state that has a unified bar association, then it falls under the Supreme Court of the state. So the federal
right.
venue is a great place to be.
Yeah, to me, that's the ballroom. And if you've been there, you know what I'm talking about. If you go down below in the state,
right.
you're in the discotheque. You know,
right.
anything goes. You know, and the, and to me, of course, the, you know, I'd rather be at the Sadie Hawkins of all places, which is a little small claims court.
Right, absolutely.
I love that.
Well, I think we need to start going after
there.
These law firms. I think we need to
yeah,
start.
Yeah, but
to,
we do. That's what you keep missing the point. We're going after the law firm. My wife just sued a law firm and two of its attorneys within it. We go after them all the time. But you don't
uh-huh.
have to go under certain – the FDCPA is the easiest the easiest. And the reason I say that, and I've always said that, and I will always say it, because there's a million and one case history in our favor against attorneys, against law firms, not only from every district in this nation, but also from the Supreme Court. So I don't have to argue the district this or, you know, middle district of Florida that. I say the Supreme Court said, enough said. I don't need to say nothing else.
Okay. So you're saying now that one of your sites, I mean, I haven't had a chance to get on the site. You actually have an area where, you know, if I want to, you know, go into that particular area of study and, you know.
It's, you go into the FDCPA, it's taking their money. If the debt collector is a debt collector, the FDCPA applies no matter who it is.
No, I'm talking about your organization, your group.
Yeah, inside we have taking their money section. In there is the FDCPA. Now, in conjunction with FDCPA, which is the federal, I use personally here in Florida a ton of the FCRA, or the FCCPA, which is the Florida Act, because mm-hmm. it has as much or more teeth than the FDCPA does, meaning it's applicable to the original creditors, not just debt collectors. So I can go
right.
after their bad behavior, and I don't care if it's the original creditor or not.
And do you have some good sample pleadings?
Of course. We always got examples, not examples, but samples that you can look at and, you know, manipulate or whatever. There's literally, I think, thousands, and we have a whole pleadings library. But my point is that if you get too convoluted, and this is from experience because I work with a ton of attorneys, if you get too convoluted, the judges, first of all, they don't get it. And in a perfect case in point, I just had an 80-year-old judge rule against my wife, but yet handed me the case. So now the 11th Circuit's going to get it and go, oh, man, this guy's lost his mind. So it's kind of like a waste for him. It's a waste of taxpayer dollars and judicial resources and every other damn thing you think of. So he's an old-timer. He's an 80-year-old man. He just didn't get it. He just flat out didn't get it. But he handed me the case, meaning he beat the crap out of the other side in his order. So it's kind of like, whatever. My point is that you got those guys, and then you got the guys that are our age in my 40s that get it. But they don't want that convoluted argument. If I can bring you a very simple FDCPA or FCCPA or conjunction, both, and even in Florida you can use the unfair and trade deceptive, now it's easy for them to understand. It's not something that's very convoluted. If you get into all the other crap, then it gets to be convoluted and, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You got to remember that you've been in it for a while. Our moderators have done a bunch of cases themselves to the point of trial. You know, the average person is not going to get – we don't want the average person getting that far. We just – you don't need it. We want you to settle long before, and there's methods to push, you know, and prod and to get them there. Dave, the MDL, you know, that multi-district litigation, Dave and another one of our members tried it. It worked, and now they're settling it. They didn't make it to the MDL. We cut them at the pass, and we found a way to do it. That's all. It's just we all get together, and we all think, okay, what's the problem, and then what are all the different angles? Okay, this is one. Let's try it. The moderators are the guinea pigs, and that's okay. I don't mind that. But I don't want you to –
Yeah, you almost need them because you've got to have somebody to bounce off of without saying,
yeah,
well, I need $325
exactly.
to bounce. Well, yeah, kiss my butt.
Right, right. So, you know, when we go after the firms, I always go after the firms just as well as the attorney and just as well as that servicer because they're all.
Oh, that's a whole. It's unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Yeah, but it's so simple.
Again,
if you go into the FDCPA, yeah, it's very, very simple. The FDCPA is like child's play, and the average person understands it, and it's easy to go in there and hammer down on them. As
right.
Larry has said many, many times, and I support him on that, I would think that it's almost impossible for a collector to collect a debt without violating the FDCPA.
Right.
Literally almost impossible. So why not use the easiest statute with the most case history that goes all the way up to the Supreme Court that's backed
right.
me up? Why should I convolute it with all kinds of other stuff that the people aren't going to get? You might get it. I might not. And I've been in it for a while. I just try to keep it simple, stupid. That's my best advice to anybody is keep it simple, stupid.
Yeah.
You know.
Just
hour here.
Yeah, and then the last thing I want to say is, Dave, is remember under FDCPA, because I'm experiencing it now, you can litigate this and the average consumer can go out and litigate and not be concerned about being hammered with attorney's fees at the end if you lose. Because the court has to make sure and determine that it was brought in bad faith or for harassment. And 99.9% of the time, it's still a may. And the may means the court finds you indigent and you can't pay, so they're not going to award any fees or costs. So you go out there, you drop the hammer on them, and at the end of the day, if for whatever reason you get a sour ass like I got, you still are not responsible for those attorney fees, which if you go other directions, you might be liable for those attorney fees if you lose.
Right.
So there's another reason to use the consumer statute. You know, there's so much.
All right, so you have,
that weighs on
you have
our
a hypothetical
side, so.
Person out there that's not totally familiar with your group, your organization, you know, you moderators and stuff. Where are you? I mean, how are you? What's the breadcrumb, so to speak, to get to like where I want to go, where I'd like to go? How do I?
You just have to join. You just got to join the site and start getting in there and studying. There's a million things
in
there.
But it's sort of the catch 22. I don't want to join stuff if it's not going to be applicable, and I can't tell from the outside if it's applicable or not.
I'm telling you it's applicable, and you got 60 days to use
right,
it.
You're,
so
you're telling
applicable.
Me applicable because it's your organization, of course.
Well, but
let me clarify it for you.
Yeah.
Let me clarify it for you very, very simply. There's a 60-day money-back guarantee. You join,
yeah.
You go in there, you look and see if it isn't beneficial to you. You can back right out of it, and all you got to do is ask for your money back. You get it. No questions
yeah.
asked.
No questions
and,
asked.
And
there's
what,
no
is, what is the website? What is the site?
It's whatliesinyourdebt.com. Just go to the site.
Okay,
and,
yeah.
Know,
see, I don't
and,
know how I ended
yeah.
up with you guys because I was actually talking to somebody else, and I ended up getting
well,
you guys.
I'm glad. That it's getting out. That, you know, we've been around
there was
for
some
4
British
years.
And... guy. There was some British guy.
I think I know who that was, yeah.
Yeah, I think whoever the guy is in Florida, is that you?
Yeah, no, yeah, we're all in Florida. I'm in Florida.
Well,
Larry's
the guy's
in Florida.
In Florida.
John's in Florida.
He was being interviewed by a British guy. I guess it was a journalist or
yeah,
something. He was
yeah.
being interviewed by a British guy.
That was me.
And,
Yeah, that was me. Yeah, he was interviewing me. So at the
yeah,
end of the
yeah,
day...
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't, you know, you can look on the internet, there's zero negative, not one. After 4 years almost, we have not a single negative comment
I
on the
I
internet.
Didn't, yeah, I didn't see any of that. I just
that's pretty strong.
Couldn't figure out how to get
strong.
Back. I couldn't figure out how to
yeah.
get back to the person that was articulating in the radio show, which I guess is you, because,
yeah.
I, you know, I don't know how or who you are. I don't know what your entity really is because I'm getting, you know, totally different names and sites from what, when I first listened to the conversation with this guy or this guy interviewing.
Because there's affiliates out there. So that's why you get that. There's affiliate links. That's all. It's just
okay,
it's just
so
a normal,
this,
yeah.
What's what WLTD, whatever it is, WLTYD or whatever it is, that's going to be
no,
your...
No, what lies in your debt.
Right, okay, I've got that.
There's no initials. It's what lies in your debt.
Right, but isn't the website WLI something? Or
no, that's the website.
Okay.
What lies in your debt?
So then that's going to go directly to your...
That'll
your
take
site.
You where you want to go.
That's
okay,
the site.
Yeah, because I don't want to end up with these third-party affiliates and, you know,
no,
sort of like
matter.
The
they get you to the
pyramid
site
scheme.
It doesn't
I'm
matter.
Not interested in that. Hmm?
Yeah, but I'm saying it's irrelevant how you get to the site. You get to the same site. There's no difference.
Well, no, it is relevant because I want to get to the ones who knows what they're talking about. I don't want to get to somebody that's making...
No, you don't
you
understand
know,
the affiliates.
Pyramid.
Yeah. No, it doesn't matter. Just go to the site. You're fine. I'm not going to go. Dave, it's too late to go into all that explanation.
Yeah,
anyway.
Yeah. We got to wrap things up here tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. Go ahead, and I'll see you guys on the other side.
All
right. Thank
you
so
much.
Yeah. All right. With
that,
what's
our schedule like?
Pardon?
I said, what is our schedule like the rest of the week?
What is our schedule like? Well, it seems to me that on Wednesdays at 3 o'clock Eastern every week, we have a webinar.
Yes,
and
we do, don't we?
And who's doing the webinar tomorrow afternoon?
Me.
And that's Sir John. And what is the subject of that webinar?
Preparing your settlement demand letter.
There you go. John will be covering that 3 o'clock Eastern tomorrow afternoon, the webinar for members. Tomorrow night, of course, is Terry's call. If you are not on Terry's mailing list, her email list to get the reminders and the information for the call, send an email to queensongbird@gmail.com. Simply say, I'd like to be on the list. And please don't wait till tomorrow afternoon to do it. Do it tonight. Get it done. So she can send you the notice out, and you can be on that call at 8 o'clock Eastern tomorrow night.
We do run that. Terry's running that till 11:30 Eastern because she's got a lot of things going on. She's had to kind of curtail it because we had some calls going late, and I've been getting the same thing on Monday nights. And speaking of the Monday night call, Dallas Death Discussion 54318 is the PIN number. That's on TalkShoe.com. That starts at 9 o'clock Eastern on Monday nights. And don't forget, everybody, in June we're going to be celebrating 5 years of doing that call. Never missed a Monday. So it's a great place to get support. But as we've said so many times, these calls are not a substitute for being a member of the site. This is to tie the pieces of the puzzle together, to answer questions about the stuff that you study in the website, and to give you support for that. It is absolutely not a substitute because the information is scattered. The other thing is, for all you people that are members, don't forget to use the forum. Get in there. There's over 3 years' worth of questions and answers, literally thousands and thousands of postings in there. There's a tremendous amount of information. There's pleadings in there, and there's the success stories. You can go look at the checks that people are getting. You can see for yourself it's real. I've got my share of them in there myself. So Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday nights, there's always stuff going. Next Tuesday night, remember, it's going to be the next installment of our ongoing webinar series of What Lies in Your Credit Report. Those will be going all the way till about the end of July. We're going to cover FCRA-related issues from A to Z. So thanks for joining us. Appreciate it. It's been a great evening. We've covered a lot of good ground. Jesse, you got any last words you want to throw in?
No, just God bless everybody. Have a great week. Thank you for joining us, and we will see most of you tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Have a great, great week, guys.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, guys.
Bye.
Good night.